तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः।
This is Gurudeva's booklet, The Advaitin. It's the one that, as it's subtitled, the little book that started it all. The book that Gurudeva was writing in 1968 that inspired him to develop his own language, the Shum language of meditation, which we've been talking about recently. So he felt that the booklet, though well written, was difficult for someone to understand who hadn't had that type of experience. So that insight led him to develop a whole new language, Shum language, to solve that problem. But today we're just reading the booklet itself. The Advaitin had been scheduled to be written for some months. However, in Switzerland, on the shores of spectacular Lago Maggiore, at our Ascona ashram in the summer of 1968, seemed to be the time and the place. The words flowed from my pen as the mind, enhanced by the constant insight to this self, unraveled itself as would a ball of well-rolled yarn. 33 students traveling with me through Europe on our 1968 InnerSearch Switzerland summer study program inspired the format of the Advaitin by their constant striving to penetrate the within. Well rewarded by clear white light experiences, they peruse further into Sabbakalpa Samadhi and inquire of me deeper into the realms of the Nirvikalpa Samadhi experience. The state where the experiencer and the experience are one. In an effort to unravel some of the mature changes that take place after such a happening, the Advaitin seems to be the answer. Therefore, this book has been written for all those who seek a new look at religion, who wish to believe in what they think and know to be true. Here, the Vedic Advaita philosophy holds the answer, not only for the practicing yogi, but for the layman as well. In short, the Advaitin believes that God is a greater intensity than any aspect of the mind, than even the clarity of the mind known as the clear white light. He believes that when once realized, he then has tapped the fullness of his potential, and from this new vantage point can work to develop various aspects of his mind, bringing the Advaitist mood of reference through even his base emotions. The self, being another word for God, is beyond the mind. Man is not man, man is God, are some of the Advaitin's statements. They may seem ego-bent and filled with creating a new minority, but when thought through, one quickly sees the truth they contain when related to a real-life pattern and wonders how possibly could life have been looked at in any other way. To these bright sadhakas, this book is dedicated. May it serve to beacon them onward from the consciousness of death to immortality. All of the planned, thought-through philosophies derive their concepts through breakthroughs into expanded consciousness. These breakthroughs, well recorded through relating them to prior concepts, form the philosophies we know today. The supreme breakthrough of the Advaitin into Nirvikalpa Samadhi sustains the philosophy known as Advaita without the necessity of recording experiential insights in the rational mind. I'll read that sentence again. That's a deep sentence. The supreme breakthrough of the Advaitin into Nirvikalpa Samadhi sustains the philosophy known as Advaita without the necessity of recording experiential insights in the rational mind. So what Gurudeva is saying is the experience itself is the point of reference without needing to document it in words. And we go from there with a new point of unthought out reference, supplementing the rational mind with current insights which it has no time to record. This is because experience can only be recorded as it happens and referred to after, whereas constant experiencing can only be lived, recorded constantly in its happening but never referred to. This is the aftermath of being. This is the aftermath of being that which was fully realized. When a chela attains Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the mind reacts in a certain way. A rebirth of the psyche occurs. The constant experience begins of that which was experienced. The laws of the related difference of concepts change, and the mind looks like being at the other end of the tunnel of consciousness looking out. Whereas before the happening, the mind was at the opposite end of the tunnel of consciousness, looking in. So that's a point we can all relate to, that usually when we explain deep meditative insights, we explain them as if we're coming in from the outside. That's how we explain it. We start here, we go in, we go in, we go in. It looks like that. But Gurudeva is saying you can also do it the other way. You can explain things as they look in coming out, which relates more to the chafe perspective. The flow of actinic energy through the constant changing force field of mental forces activates these otic force fields during an experience of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. This activation must be controlled through previous sadhanas, disallowing an influx of force that would deter succeeding experiences of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Perceptive insights into the overall nature of the mind, mind and self, as expounded through Advaita Yoga. This in turn brings out of the mind many comforting feelings as the Advaita point of reference is gained. All thinking people formulate their conclusions from one singular point of reference. Generally, it is dvaitic, dualistic in context. The pure Advaita point of reference concedes positive conclusions backed by occasional intuitive flashes. Hence, Advaita Yoga is in fact healthy for the mind of man. Beginning with the foreground of the average lifespan, we see lapses of consciousness in the generative functions of the mind. This is caused, no doubt, by all the time spent in allowing Advaita thinking to penetrate the feeling nature. However, when schooled in Advaitism, the same mind structure just referred to can change its format and condense its issues and without hesitation relate all thinking as well as feeling to its base concept of the self beyond the mind, yet felt through the mind even before a partial actual realization occurs. So what Gurudeva is thinking, saying is that we stay young through realizing God, I guess. Very interesting point of view. To cause Advaita Yoga philosophy to be a lifeline in one's life, he must only be capable of thinking through the processes of subjective reasoning. Later, some questions will be raised to stimulate this process of reason one must enter into, and exact methodology for bringing forth the Advaita concepts in the mind into felt reality. Not all persons, of course, are able to conceive of or accept the Advaitin point of view. The mind is too... too superstitionally cluttered with Dvaitic threats upon their own personal peace and future to dare look further. The process of disbelief is therefore almost automatic and rejection final. Hence the two, Dvaita and Dvaita, always exist in the human kingdom. Man raising in consciousness from darkness into light has only to perceive his ancestors as they too sought through the lower ebbing layers of the mind to bring forth from within themselves factual knowledge based not only on inductive thinking, but the actual birth of experience. The format, therefore, is that to make a philosophy live, to make a philosophy live vibrantly in mind and spur him on into its experiential states, its opposite must occur, causing the competitive whirl of the senses as they seek consciously conscious states. So, Vidyadeva is saying that it's the challenge of controlling the mind that motivates us to control it and go deeper. In other words, it's hard to control the mind. It's very active and dynamic, so dealing with that activity and dynamism is what eventually leads to a control of the mind. As the Advaita philosophy is looked at under the cold eyes of reason, it stands no chance of being realized in the personal life scope of the student. He must struggle first with his nature and clear an Advaita pathway through many phases of the mind, first relating all experience through the summing up process of reason, then clearly and unyieldingly define all his actions and way of life to the Advaita path to enlightenment. This is difficult, and few really make the necessary strides beyond belief in Advaita thinking. But even those who formulate a new point of reference through subjective reason live a grander and fuller life far from the superstitious Dvaitic entanglements of the lower mind. Talk to yourself and convince yourself of the logistics of the paramount factor that mind in all its various phases is form, even as protruded in light. Form is vibration, and yet beyond any possible vibration of consciousness is the self beyond form, hence more intense than consciousness of time and space. Once sitting quietly in a meditative state, thus talking this over with yourself, trying to prove out the theory as well as disprove it, habit patterns of the subconscious begin to change radically, as preconceived, perhaps even unthought out concepts held in faith begin to break, altering this mind structure. Yes, a newfound freedom, a lightness of body and mind, a true sense of religion occurs as the Advaitic principles begin to penetrate the mind structure and displace erroneous impressions. Thou art that, the sages tell us, and often never go on to explain the that, the self. This self within the very cellular structure of man can actually only be talked about, but must become a constant nirvikalpa experience to be realized. So that's fairly neat. I think I'll stop there. This came up in a much simpler context recently. Talking to father and son. The father's probably 45, 50 years old, and the son's around 22, and the son was going to MIT, so bright young man. The father had recently taken up the study of Vedanta and was particularly interested in the pursuit of the meditation, who am I? So that's a common meditation, you know, reflecting on who am I and The deepest answer, of course, is I am God. So we were talking about that, and he was asking, you know, can my son, is my son too young to practice who am I? Is this a concept just for older people? That's what he was asking me. So I said, no one's too young, but it needs to start with a basic principle. And then I gave him the principle of positive self-concept. I created 9 principles for raising children. They all begin with a P, like positive self-concept, profound self-confidence, prejudice-free consciousness. You know, there's about 9 of them. And so the key one, the base one, is a positive self-concept. So we talked about that, and you know, making sure that your children, no matter if they're young or old, have a positive self-concept, because that's the first step toward being successful in the pursuit of who am I, which is what this is about, the Advaita perspective, that in our essence we are God. So sometimes in growing up, the experiences we encounter are not supporting a positive self-concept. So the most common one is the corrections received by parents. Some parents seem to delight in telling their children they're stupid. You know, you're stupid and worthless. You've done this something wrong again. And that's what they hear as they grow up for years and years. You know, you're stupid, you're worthless, everybody's smarter than you are. Why didn't I have a smarter son? Why didn't I have a more obedient daughter? You know, that kind of negative self-concept sometimes is a way of life that children experience. And quite often it can be reinforced in schools where the teachers, again, are not very supportive in their correction and they're telling the students they're stupid. So what we like to do is distinguish between the person and the behavior. The behavior is stupid. The person is never stupid. The behavior was wrong. The person is never wrong. So, you know, that is the ideal form of correction. And you can even say it when a child is old enough to understand, or even in an adult situation. It can work in an office if you're the supervisor and you have staff that you're training. A way of doing that to distinguish between the person and the behavior is something like this. You say, that was sure a stupid thing you did, but you're such a smart person, I know you'll never do it again. You know, I used the words to, you know, you wouldn't necessarily say the behavior was stupid, but I used it to exaggerate the point. You know, the person is smart no matter what he does. The behavior is stupid. So the person is so smart, in fact, that just doing something wrong once, he'll never do it wrong again. Like that, you know, you distinguish. So the first requirement, therefore, in following this pursuit of who am I, or finding out our deepest identity with God, is to make sure we have a positive self-concept. So how do we know if we have a positive self-concept? Well, positive self-concept is demonstrated in our attitude toward daily life. And we wake up in the morning, and do we feel things are going to go well? Do we feel life is fine? Do we feel that we're going to be adequate to meet the challenges that are going to come to us during the day? Or when we wake up in the morning, we're kind of overwhelmed by everything. We say, oh no, another day, this is going to be terrible. And you know, we're always worried and lacking confidence. So, you know, we need the former state of mind. And fortunately, teachers such as our guru have given us the tools, the methods for changing from a negative self-concept to a positive one, which we won't go into this morning, not enough time. But the basic idea is that if we have a negative self-concept, a small one or a big one, or sometimes it comes, sometimes it goes, you know, to whatever degree, we can get rid of it. It's not us. It's just an accumulation of impressions we have acquired through growing up, primarily from our parents, That's what impresses us the most in growing up, is how our mother and father treat us. Secondarily, from others, such as teachers. And when we get older, even at work, if that's happening, impressions at work can reinforce it. So we need to get rid of that and end up with a positive self-concept about our outer self. That's our outer self. It's not our inner self. But if we don't have a positive concept about our outer self, we won't be able to find our inner self. You know, we go inside and all we find is negativity. All we find is self-doubt. We don't find anything positive. So we need to be able to go inside and find happiness and joy in a sense that we can accomplish things. And that's a positive self-concept. So Brihadeva has a simple teaching, simpler than this one, that explains our divinity in an understandable way, and that we all have a soul, and as a soul, we all are a soul. In English, you tend to do that. You say you have something which you actually are. But we don't say we have a soul, we have to say we are a soul. We all are a soul, living in a physical body, and as a soul body, we are distinct from others, distinct from other people, and distinct from God. Gurudeva describes the body of the soul as looking like the physical body, but made out of light, spiritual light. That is us as a soul body. So inside that soul body, which Gurudeva calls the essence of the soul, is where we are identical with God. So to see our identity with God, we have to go inside the soul, right, to the very core of us. If we can get there, that's where the Advaita principle that man is God exists. And if we, when we come out from that, we lose it. We go into Dvaita, we go into dualism, where we are separate from others and we are separate from God. And then if we go back in far enough, we can go back into monism or Dvaita, and then we come out. So depending on where we are in consciousness, we're either a dualist or a monist. We're either a Dvaitin or an Advaitin at that moment, based on where we are in consciousness, because these are experiential truths. And that perhaps is Gurudeva's strongest message here, is that it's not enough to accept the philosophy, I am God, the soul is God. We need to experience it. Accepting it is only a first step toward realizing it. It's like acknowledging a mountain is there is the first step toward climbing it, right? If you don't see the mountain, you won't think about climbing it. You say, oh, there's a mountain there. Wouldn't it be fun to climb to the top? I have nothing else to do today, you know. Got on my hiking shoes. Let's climb. So you have to see the mountain to be motivated to climb it. So you have to see the concept in this case that man is God, or if we can go deeply enough into our soul, into us as the soul, we'll experience God. Meaning, we'll see our identity with God. And there was a very simple way that our Padma Guru would put that. He, Yogaswami of Jaffna, Sri Lanka, he didn't talk in lots of philosophical terms. He liked to put profound truths in simple words. So unless you understood what he was talking about, you might not realize it was profound. It just sounded like everyday talk. So he would say, I am in you. That's how he would greet people. I am in you. So what did he mean? He meant he was aware in the essence of his soul, and from that point of view, he was permeating everything, he was everything, and he didn't see any difference between himself and others. He was a living Dvaitin. He didn't see a second person. Everything he saw was himself. That's a living Dvaitin. So he would also put it another way, which was a little simpler to grasp. He'd say, how many people are here? Of course, you know, what do we have? Maybe 35? From one point of view, the answer is, well, 35, Swami. But, of course, if someone says that, he says, no, there is only one. That one is an obvious one, right? Okay, there's only one. What does he mean, there's only one? Well, he means that if you go deeply enough inside yourself, you get into the consciousness where there's no division between you and everything else. You're in the consciousness, just of oneness. In other words, just as you know, we take it for granted, our consciousness permeates our entire physical body, which it does unless someone has an injury. But you know, it's a very strange feeling. I'm sure all of you have had it at one point or another. You know, like you wake up in the morning and you cramp your arm and you touch your arm and it feels like somebody else. Because you've cut off the nerve temporarily, and your consciousness isn't in your arm even, and doesn't feel like you. So we're so used to our consciousness permeating our body, we may not think about it. But just like that, you know, we have a picture of Shiva with the universe within him. So it's a way of trying to say that just as our consciousness permeates the physical body, so does God as consciousness permeate everything, the entire universe. And God as omnipresence exists within us as the at the essence of our soul. So if we can go into the essence of our soul deep enough, we experience the consciousness that permeates everything. And so just like our normal consciousness permeates the physical body, our super consciousness or divine consciousness, Satchidananda, permeates every body and everything. And Gurudeva gives a key on that. He says it's easiest to experience in those who are close to you. So if you want to become omnipresent, start with your friends and family. See if you could feel no difference between yourself and them, and then work out from there. And it's easier with people you like than people you don't like. It's very hard to see God in someone you don't like. Well, start with those you like, and once you really get good at that, then you can also see God permeating those you don't like. But it takes more practice. Thank you very much. Om Namah Shivaya.